You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Welcome to the Move the Sticks podcast. I am Bucky Brooks, and I'm really excited because sitting in for DJ today is one of my favorite, one of my buds, Bruce Feldman, the guy who knows all things about college football. And this is going to be a fun discussion because we're going to talk about what is going on in the current landscape and what and how it will impact I guess the future of the college game, but also how they eventually impact the pro game going forward. How you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing great, Bug. Good to see you. Good to be on. I know I got big shoes to fill, so I will do the best I can.
Nah. The shoes aren't that big. Like, you're a big name. Like, you have everything. Got, like, my bookshelf, I still got Kane Mutiny and all that other stuff. So, like, you're the headliner of this one. I mean, look, I got to hit you with this out the gate because you know the college game so well. Just what has been, I guess, the after effects of the USC-UCLA announcement, USC and UCLA announcing that they're going to join the Big Ten, the Pac-12 seemingly falling apart. And what do we make of college football in the landscape right now?
Well, I think, Bucky, you can get a little in the weeds of it. So some of it is like, you know, I'm hearing from regents in the California system about they are really ticked off that Cal is getting left behind and UCLA is moving because they're connected, right? So how did that happen? And so there's that, you know, there's stuff like that. I think there's also stuff about the practical side on the field. Depending on who you talk to coaches who've coached at University of Hawaii, and they'll be like, man, it's one thing to do a trip to play Notre Dame and fly east once a year. It's another thing to do like multi-time zone trips four times a year. That can be draining on your players. And, you know, I had this conversation with Norm Chow, who was the head coach at Hawaii, and he was talking about he had a back-to-back where they were long trips when he was the head coach at Hawaii. And he said one of his family members who was visiting the team was like, man, your guys look just dead in the pregame. And he was like, yeah, we got shut out. And he goes, we would have probably lost that game bad anyway, but we could have lost 100-0 and that kind of thing. But then, you know, I've had this conversation with Chip Kelly at UCLA. Obviously, he knows the NFL model where, as you know, you lived it, where you're going to be traveling a bunch. Now, it's different for grown men as opposed to college students. But, you know, as he put it, their trip to Nebraska isn't actually that much longer. It's like a couple hundred miles longer than the flight to Seattle would be if they're playing Washington. I think the challenging part really is going to be the other sports more so than football. I don't think it's going to be a season where the Pac-12 is going to make USC or UCLA do multiple, like one season that they would have to play Maryland and the same season they'd have to travel to Penn State or Rutgers or Ohio State. I think they'd probably do one of those for each 1 year, and then they try to balance it as best they could. To me, that is going to be a challenge. But again, UCLA practices in the morning all the time anyway. So I think Kelly has studied this a lot. He's like, well, to combat changing time zones, you really don't change your body schedule in that. You just kind of work it the same way, and then your players don't have as big of an adjustment. So I think there's that piece. And then there's all the wild speculation that is going on about what does the Big 12 do? Do they try to poach the leftovers from the Pac-12? How desirable is any of them? I mean, the thing that I didn't really realize, Bucky, until I was, you know, really became a sideline reporter for Fox 5 or 6 years ago, was the ratings component. I knew about it, but I didn't really, you know, as good, as successful as like a Oklahoma State has been over the last, you know, 10, 12 years, they don't do very big TV numbers. You know, maybe they do when they play Bedlam against their arch rival, Oklahoma. But if it's not Oklahoma, like you go back and look, for example, mid-October last year, Oklahoma State had a really good year. They play West Virginia. The number is a, you know, is a really, really low number. Same Saturday, you look at TCU, Texas Tech, which are like, you know, middle of the road at that point, Big 12 schools. And again, really low TV numbers, even in a, you know, in a desirable time slot. And I think for the people who are going to make these deals and try to, you know, see what the, what's financially feasible, I think that's the part where it's just, I don't know how much leverage either side has.
Yeah, no, it's so crazy to watch. I mean, obviously you and I are a little more old school now. I just remember Pac-12, and I think about growing up in North Carolina and watching on the East Coast, it's the 3:30 Pac-12 game, and watching all of those rivalries and watching the sunset descending over the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum, and just how different that is. But then to think about USC matching up with Ohio State in a regular season game, to think about UCLA playing Michigan or any one of those teams, it has that Rose Bowl nostalgia, but it's now a regular conference game. And so from the Big Ten standpoint, I can see how big that would be. You have these big matchups and you have all of that kind of going, but, you know, I just think it leaves the Pac-12. And then when I think about the Pac-12, what is left of the Pac-12? Like, why would it be an attractive option? Because I think recently, maybe as recent as yesterday, the Big 12 and Pac-12, they were having discussions, but that fell apart. So where does the Pac-12 go now?
I think they've got to sit there and look at their options and go, okay, what kind of, because they're in a TV negotiation window that I think ends like the first week of August. So that's not that far off. You know, USC especially, but certainly UCLA. It's obviously LA is a huge TV market. And unlike, you know, New York, which is the biggest TV market in the country, when the Big Ten says it has, you know, the New York because it has Rutgers, it doesn't. It really doesn't. But USC, as you know, living here, is a big part of Los Angeles. And UCLA is as well, certainly more than Rutgers, but especially USC. And so you take them out of it. You know, Bucky, I would ask you this. In a given year, this time of year, if I said to you, what are the 25 most intriguing or compelling matchups going to be going into the year, and you take USC and UCLA out of it, especially USC, I don't know, short of maybe Oregon and Utah, I don't know what game in the Pac-12 you'd set up. Yeah, that's something people out who are not diehards of that fan base who are going to want to watch. I mean, Arizona's been horrific for a long time. I think Jed Fish has them going in the right direction, but they've been so bad. Arizona State has been pretty average at best. Utah has been good. Colorado has been mostly really bad. And you need to look at the North. Stanford used to be really good, but they backslid so far in like the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Washington, you know, has really kind of backslid as well. And then you look at Cal has been, you know, not even as good as Arizona State, Oregon State, Washington State. I think it's hard for people to hang their hats on that. So it's really Oregon. And I was surprised, Bucky, to go back to the Big Ten news with UCLA and USC, that Oregon really wasn't going to be a factor in that. But then the more people you talk to are inside, the Big Ten didn't really want them. And I don't think UCLA is going to miss them either. I mean, I'm sorry, USC is not going to miss them, because I think they were okay with, you know what, Oregon was recruiting and pulled some players that we wanted. It's going to be harder for them to do that if they're on a less viable, less attractive conference situation.
Yeah, no, it's a big thing. It's a very challenging thing for Oregon, because they had made significant inroads in Southern Cal. And one of the things that you could tell Southern Cal parents is, hey, you can see your kid play at least twice a year, maybe down in Southern Cal. It's really easy. But now you take that out of the mix, it just makes it a more challenging and difficult thing. And also, without being disrespectful, if the Pac-12 is no longer seen as a Power Five, and it becomes more of a Group of Five feel or look to it, it kind of opens up some of the other schools out here to kind of start recruiting against them. So before, your San Jose States and your San Diego States and those things, like, they always had to maybe settle for players that were maybe a notch below. Well, now you take away the Pac-12 mystique over Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, and some of these tools. Now it's kind of open season. And so it changes the dynamic. It changes the way things are viewed. And it certainly would change the kind of players that may go to those places if they don't kind of find a way to remain relevant and to kind of remain a cut above some of the other conferences.
Right. I remember when Leach got to Washington State, and a lot of times they would battle at the bottom tier of the Pac-12. So it would be Oregon State, maybe one of the Arizona schools, and that, you know, hopefully for them, not Utah. And that's what they were battling, but they could probably pull away from the Mountain West schools. Certainly, you know, San Diego State, Utah State, you know, those, Colorado State. I don't know if you take a kid anywhere from where we are south, and that kid has San Diego State, which is going into a new stadium, right? And has had a lot of success, not just under Brady Hoke, but under Rocky Long and even before, and has good football history. And now you're talking about what you said. That kid's family can see them play, I don't know, not just six times a year, because, you know, those are the home games, but then maybe some other, you know, closer games if you take the LA schools out. If it's the equivalent of, do I go to Pullman or do I go to Corvallis, or, you know, or do I even go to Colorado to play football in the Pac-10, if that's what it is, or do I stay closer to home in San Diego State? I think that's going to make San Diego State certainly have a, you know, if San Diego State doesn't get roped into what is the Pac-10, Pac-12, which I think could be a possibility, because then at least it gives the Pac-12 a Southern California presence. I think that's an interesting situation to, you know, subplot to this is how this works for San Diego State, whether it stays, it doesn't get to move up, but it stays in the Mountain West and then it has a more attractive positioning to recruits, or if it gets bumped up a little bit to whatever it becomes, the Pac-12. I think that I in a lot of ways, I think this is a win-win for the Aztecs.
Yo, I think it's a major thing for the Aztecs. I think the Aztecs are feasting on the opportunity to now maybe have a bigger recruiting base, because when you think about San Diego State and what they've been able to do is, look, they've been very successful. They have a new stadium that everyone is going to be able to want. The school is picturesque and all the scenery and all those other things. The only thing they needed is like just more attention. And now if they can get better players and compete, and you don't have the Pac-12 that you're necessarily competing against, yes, yeah, wide open. And we could have some of those fun days, like those fun days where Marshall Faulk and all those guys were back there. And it was kind of like the Wild Wild West and they were lighting up scoreboards. This has been a really good program for a long time. And so I'm just curious. But if we think about the Pac-12, naturally, the next thing is, well, what is going to happen with the ACC? Being a ACC fan, having played in North Carolina, my thing is like, well, they have to get Notre Dame. If they don't get Notre Dame, the ACC falls apart. So what do you think is going to happen there when it comes to ACC and Notre Dame?
I think the Notre Dame is obviously got the most leverage of all the people who are not affiliated with the two power leagues right now. And I say two power, I think it is – the Big Ten and the SEC, certainly. They have the big TV money. They have the most desirable brands. Notre Dame, to me, feels like it would be more likely, to me, I'm not saying this has been anything imminent. I just think if they end up going into a league, I think it's more stable, and there will be a lot more money for Notre Dame on a TV deal in the Big Ten. I really think you know, right now, I think the ACC members are making somewhere in the low 30 millions per school, which is, I don't know, that might be a third of what the Big Ten is going to get next time, you know, and that's before Notre Dame is in there. So you add Notre Dame, it's probably even richer than that. So Notre Dame geographically probably is a better fit. Certainly, you know, with there in Chicago, a lot of these are, you know, the Chicago area, and a lot of drives for them. And I'm not saying you can't make some of those drives, but it's just, I just feel like it's probably more of a fit for the Big Ten. And then you take the additional piece of this where there's this grant of rights that's locked in for ACC schools, but Notre Dame doesn't have that component as it relates to football. So it's not like prohibitive for them to get out, from my understanding of how much it would cost them to separate. I know Notre Dame loves the uniqueness of its independence. I think at some point they will look and say, you know what, just there's too many factors pushing us in the direction of we can't afford to not join the Big Ten going forward. I think that's what will happen.
Okay, so let's look at it this way. That hurts my heart that Notre Dame has played every sport except football in the ACC. They've done all these things. I know football is a big driving force, but I think from a football playing standpoint, it probably hurts them to go into the Big Ten in terms of, like, they're all national title or nothing. And so in terms of, like, their ability to get into the playoff and those things, I think it's probably a more difficult road if they go to the Big Ten as opposed to going to the ACC. Because was it during the COVID year where they kind of played a four participant in the ACC? Did they win it that year, or were they – I can't remember.
What happened there was Trevor got hurt. So DJ played, and DJ played reasonably well against them. Yeah. But I think that so much of what happened to Notre Dame in that was, like, you remember in the window of that, it was all like, hey, we are doing the best we can to keep this thing afloat. But it was like, you know, it just, to me, I think so much of it was like such an aberration that particular season. You know, they ended up, you know, having – like, I think Clemson had their issues. They ended up losing the the Rose Bowl they went to? I'm looking back at this.
Who? Which one? Clemson?
No, like Notre Dame.
Was it the Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
Yes.
They played Alabama in the Rose Bowl. That's what it was. Forgot that it was actually the Rose Bowl, right? So
I did too. Yeah.
But it was so they got wiped out by Clemson in the ACC title game rematch.
That's right. That's what happened. They beat them up in Notre Dame in overtime. They come back and have to redo it. And then Clemson beats them because Trevor played in that.
Yeah. And the reason why when I said Rose Bowl, it didn't sound right is because that was the year that the Rose Bowl wasn't here because they couldn't play it. So the Rose Bowl was technically in Jerry Jones Stadium.
Texas. Yes. That's what it was. It was in Texas because you couldn't get it.
Weird.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so with the Notre Dame thing, I just think they have a chance to be a legitimate power. Like, and if they jump into the Big Ten, now they really got to compete. Ohio State is going to be good. Michigan State is bouncing back. Michigan, all those things. It would be great in terms of their rivalry thing, but a good Notre Dame team could end up being a 7-4 or 7-5 team just based on how that conference is weighted.
You still got James Franklin at Penn State. I think there is that. Whereas – still, as much as they don't love this term, there's just a lot of, quote, basketball schools in the ACC. Look, Mario Cristobal is recruiting very well at his alma mater now, and maybe he'll flip it. Who knows if Mike Norvell will get it going? Who knows if Dion will be getting it going in Tallahassee? But Florida State used to be really good. They're not now. Like, I think your arch rivals, one of your, like, NC State is good this year. I think they'll be really good.
They are. It pains me, but they are good.
I mean, when I say your rival, do you immediately go to Duke, or where's your head take it?
Well, because I grew up in Raleigh, my head always goes to NC State. But I think most people would, the basketball thing would always make it where Duke is the rival. And, you know, NC State is such a weird thing, right? Because, like, for all of the stuff that has happened for NC State, they haven't won a basketball, like a national title in basketball since Jimmy V. They hadn't won, I don't think, an ACC basketball title since 87. And even as good as their football has been, Dick Sheridan and now under Dave Doran, they still haven't gained what I would call that national acclaim. They've had good players or whatever, but they just haven't been able to kind of like resonate on the national scene as a team that is like a top team, despite having a lot of NFL talent come through.
Yeah. By the way, Bucky, I'm going to give you a compliment indirectly. As we were talking about this, I was thinking one of the most lopsided games I've ever seen. I was in that area for something. I was like, North Carolina was playing Duke, and Julius Peppers was like Superman against them. And it could have been like 90. And I was like, I wonder if Bucky was on that team. And then I went back and looked.
No.
He's almost my age.
No. So here's what's happening. The funny thing about the Duke North Carolina thing is my freshman year, 1989, was Steve Spurrier's last year.
They were good, right? Yeah, that was Ben Bennett.
Duke won the ACC.
Yeah, Ben Bennett was their quarterback then, right?
I think so. Clark Snehan was the wide receiver things. And so it was Steve Spurrier's last hurrah. And Steve Spurrier doing Steve Spurrier stuff. We played them always. The last game was traditional of the game. They beat us and go get the victory belt. And rather than shake hands, they run to the auxiliary scoreboard and take a team picture. And I remember Coach Brown after that saying at the end of the game, like going into the locker room, he's like, we'll never lose to them again. And so that started a run where, man, it was like 18 of 20 or whatever, where Carolina just owned the rivalry. And it all started from the Spurrier thing. So what you saw was like Carolina in full earnest, like just making sure that they always knock Duke around, which is funny. But back to NC State, because I think it's funny that NC State has been able to not only get like NFL talent, like I feel like they've dominated when it comes to like recruiting defensive linemen, but their quarterback they got this year, it pains me to say, he's a good quarterback, Leary.
Yeah. Do you remember seeing him at Elite 11 when he was in high school?
I don't. Like, it's so crazy because he was kind of nondescript. I do remember him coming down, and I remember to go from Jersey to NC State is still kind of a weird thing. Like, man, you, like, how'd you end up at State from Jersey? Like, that doesn't kind of, but back in the day, there used to be a pipeline, Jersey to NC State when Dick Sheridan was there. And I was like, well, maybe they found a way to reconnect that recruiting trail. But no, I don't remember, but I will say this, man, look, he's a killer. And getting around him at Elite 11 this summer, the more I'm around him, the more I'm like, oh, he has the goods in terms of like the questions that he asks and the way that he carries himself. He has some stuff that I think people are going to find real intriguing. So we'll talk about Bryce Young and people are talking about CJ Stroud. He's a guy that I think you need to watch because to me, he has that stuff where he could explode his final season at NC State.
Yeah, he didn't look like much, but I just meant he wasn't very tall. But like the ball really jumped out of his hands there at that camp. I was like, who is he? And then I remember thinking he committed NC State at the time and thinking, well, this is the one who ends up, he'll get picked up by like somebody bigger, somebody has more, you know, quarterback, you know, try. And it's not, obviously Russell Wilson, you know, went there and they've had, you know, quarterbacks who come through there, but I just remember thinking, people, will he stay with them? And then so we were supposed to do their bowl game against UCLA last year, my TV crew, and the linebacker group, you know, obviously you know, Peyton Wilson was a stud, but he missed almost all last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have three who, you know, hesitant because I don't know how you want to categorize Will Anderson's a linebacker or defensive end or whatever, but short of Alabama, I would say they have the best linebacking core probably in the country. And, you know, obviously they lost Icky. They lost a couple of good running backs, but they should be, man, I wouldn't be shocked if they won the ACC and wouldn't shock me if they made a playoff even. Because he's a good quarterback.
Yeah, they have a good quarterback. They have a good D line. And we've seen the recipe is normally you have to have an A-level quarterback. And if you got a really strong defense, particularly up front where you can get to the quarterback without blitzing, like, yeah, that's the recipe. If they're explosive enough on offense, because I think the thing is, when we talk about those teams in the playoff, there has to have an explosive element where they can put points up on the board in a hurry. They have some interesting thing, but look, man, it comes down to quarterback play. And this year to me is fascinating because the quarterbacks in the college football landscape, I think they're a ton because I'm sure Mario Cristobal feels good about the quarterback that he has. Yeah. Watching the young guy.
Tyler Van Dyke.
Yeah, like Tyler Van Dyke can make plays. I mean, we talk about – everyone's going to talk about Young and Stroud. Those teams are always going to be in the conversation. I mean, just really good quarterbacks. And it's so different to talk about college football this year compared to last year because last year there were so many unknowns at the position. This year I feel like they're more brand names. But I still feel like there's still going to be some unheralded guys that kind of pop up.
Well, let's get. I would love to hear you and DJ talk about three particular guys in this, and they're actually kind of guys from who are playing in your area, not maybe necessarily from your area. So one is Brennan Armstrong at Virginia. He threw for a ton of yards. He's got. I feel like he's got some gunslinger in him. Like there's a little bit of edge. And Virginia is a school that I don't know if when I say we, I mean like a lot of college football media probably didn't talk about enough. Put up big numbers. I don't feel like people had a great handle on exactly what's going on. Tony Elliott goes there, who was the Clemson OC, did a terrific job there. So should we be paying more attention to him? The other two, Grayson McCall at Coastal Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Great numbers in from a efficiency ratio, standpoint at Coastal Carolina. They have a funky offense, and he shines in it. I don't know if he is – is he – consistently accurate enough to be a big-time NFL quarterback. I'd be curious what you guys think on that. And he's actually from, I think, the same area as – I remember talking to Sam Howell last summer, and I think they're from the same area. They worked out together. And the third guy is at Wake Forest, and that's Sam Hartman, who's really good, also a very funky system. We know they do the slow mesh, and he does a ton of – there's a ton of different stuff going on with that. Those are three guys who I think are all elite college quarterbacks. My guess is Brennan Armstrong would probably be the most attractive of the NFL prospects. I'm curious what how you see those guys.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of intrigue over the Virginia quarterback because of what Tony Elliott can do and how he can unlock him in terms of letting him throw it all around the yard. And when you think about Tony Elliott and the quarterbacks that have come through, the way that Clemson has been able to kind of get those guys up and running with, I would call, easy completions. Yeah, they're talented, but it's also been a game that's very easy for them. I think he'll benefit from that. And you're right, on a national scale, most people don't talk about Virginia. For me, having played in the ACC and remembering, look, there was a time when Virginia was number one. Virginia, when I was in school, like Herman Moore, Sean Moore, all those guys. And then after that, like they had Terry Kirby and all those guys. Like there was a run where Virginia was like a big-time team. And so we have seen it happen, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony Elliott be able to get it going immediately because you have a quarterback. And if you have a quarterback, they always have skill guys. And so it's always been a matter of can they get that part going. So I think he is one of those guys where in the last couple of years where we've seen the Joe Burrows and the Kenny Pickett of the world kind of like hit the launch pad.
Kenny Pickett did it. Zach Wilson did it in the pandemic year from BYU. Yes.
Yeah. So
I don't know who it is. It could be one of those guys like Leary already kind of blew up. It's just we in the media haven't, recognized it enough. I don't know if like Keaton Slovis at Pitt. I don't know if, JT Daniels reunited with Graham Harrell at West Virginia now. If it's like there's a lot to get it like that backyard brawl game. It's like the two USC quarterbacks playing each other against, West Virginia Pitt. I'm excited. It's an early season game. I think Will Levis is going to be fun to watch. He
had super fun. Yeah.
Big. He's strong. I know DJ did a breakdown of him a couple of weeks back, but he's got the big arm and he's physical. And it's just the second year. It's like a second offensive coordinator in 2 years at Kentucky. And I don't know if they have a receiver for him. So,
yeah. But it's funny about Kentucky, right? Like Kentucky, there's always the buzz about the kid. And I think Kentucky, he quietly is putting out these pros that you look at me like, oh, I didn't know he played at Kentucky. And so Stoops has done a really good job of getting this program to the point where they're beyond competitive, but they're kind of knocking on the door to kind of get into the conversation as one of the heavyweights in the SEC because of consistency. But you are right. I do wonder if they have a pass catcher, someone that can come in and just give them the steady production because they have a great quarterback and not have the playmakers, it can impact them. And I think about Sam Howell losing his players at North Carolina on the perimeter certainly impacted his ability to do what he did the previous year. So we'll see if that has a similar effect. And going back to McCall, because you brought him up from Coastal Carolina. I think he's an interesting case study in terms of the offense and evaluators being able to use their imagination, because the offense is really what I would call a modernized triple option offense. I think they've done a really good job of doing those things to put defenders in conflict, and whether you call it RPOs or regular option stuff, they do a lot of things that allow the quarterback to be aggressive as a quick decision maker. Can you, as an evaluator, look at McCall and say, you know what? I think there's a path for him to have success at a high level in the league, but we might have to tweak some of the things that he's doing. But that offense, I mean, we've seen that offense has given people problems for years, and he's been a big part of like their kind of emergence in that league.
I'm interested when you have like, and I don't want to compare him, like the only reason I'm bringing this name up is just because he was just Lamar Jackson was a generational talent at Louisville and won the Heisman. And it's like, you know, whatever, like how he fits, like obviously the Ravens have done a really good job. And I think they've done also a good job. Like I love Tyler Huntley coming out. I'm not saying I thought he was going to be a pick, but he's like, if you ask me who's the toughest quarterback you've ever been around, I'm saying him. And he's not even like, it's not like tough in terms of like, he's not a big dude. He's 185 pounds, but he was really good. And so they plugged him in as, you know, here's the guy who's going to be the understudy kind of thing. It's not like we're taking Matt Barkley over there and say, oh yeah, we're going to go from Lamar and Matt can get us out of a game, but we're not going to do same stuff. I don't know if anybody in the NFL looks at it and says, all right, this guy is so talented that we're going to major in what they did there to translate, as opposed to, like you said, we're going to tweak some things that he does, which I think probably is realistic, as opposed to we're going to tweak some things that we do to because we love him so much, you know. And I could be wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe he will.
Yeah, no, I think to me, man, I think the league is going to that. I think the way the college game is trending, because so many guys are getting on the field early and because so many offenses are showing you that you can play with different style athletes at the position, I think you're seeing more NFL teams do that. Look, Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia and the way that they basically took Oklahoma's offense and just made it their own. Because when I look at the Eagles play, they're running parts of Lincoln Riley's run game. I'm seeing counter GT with bubble screens and fly sweeps and misdirection where he's doing the same things that he was tasked with doing at Oklahoma. And I think the great play callers in the National Football League are willing to do that. They're willing to take the talent and say, okay, here's what he does really well. I'm going to find a way to put him in a situation where he's always playing to his strengths while he learns how to play maybe traditional quarterback in a year or two. I think that's the modern way. I think that's the way that it has to be if you're going to play with so many of these quarterbacks that we're seeing that are great athletes, but they're doing it in maybe non-traditional systems.
Yeah, and I even think, like, I did one NFL game as a sideline reporter. It was Josh Allen's rookie year. You know, Josh Allen was running all over the place, right? And so I give Daboll a lot of credit. I mean, some of the stuff they did, now he has like, I don't even want to call it like a get out of jail free card once they got, you know, Diggs out there, because he's such right? So that, I think that creates another, sometimes I feel like we in the media like end up just saying, okay, this is the OC, this is the offense, and you just kind of forget how good, like what a difference some of these guys are with receivers and the dynamic it changes. And I think we're so used to just like, okay, this is what they do, this is their offense, as opposed to like, well, because this guy's drawn so much attention, this opens up all this other stuff, you know. And so it's just, I don't know, it's kind of fascinating to watch how, as you know better than me, how just when you have such special talent out there, you got to take advantage of it. Like I have become more of an Eagles fan because Jalen Hurts is there. Not because I think Jalen Hurts is Joe Burrow, you know, but I just think he is, it's fun to see somebody who was so successful in college and was such a strong personality. Anybody's ever run around Jalen Hurts, strong personality, you know, coach's kid times 10. And, he's somebody I pull for. And I was like, I'm glad they're doing what they're doing there, because I think 5 years ago, maybe, unless it's maybe Andy Reid, but 5 years ago, 10 years ago, like the NFL doesn't recognize it and they're just too rigid. And maybe that guy doesn't flourish.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up. Picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all. But here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got it. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
I think you're right. I think Jalen Hurts doing that. I think what Baltimore has done, doubling down on the athletic quarterback, Lamar Jackson and Tyler Huntley, being able to say, hey, man, this is our system. We're going to run a very collegiate-like system with the quarterback heavily involved in the run game, and we're going to make sure that everyone in the quarterback room can run exactly the same thing. We haven't seen that. And so it has been fun to see different styles on Sunday, because normally that's just a Saturday game. Like the college football game is one where you can tune in and watch triple option and power spread and maybe a traditional old school like a Stanford and someone that is doing something completely off the wall, like you talk about Wake Forest or Coastal Carolina. I think that's why a lot of us are really college football fans, because the contrasting styles make for good matchups and compelling matchups when we see some of these games being in the regular season, but also in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I just as a fan of both, but the thing that I'm always taken by when I see NFL is just like, and it, the raw physicality, and sometimes you see, especially defensive players, it's just jaw dropping. You know, as somebody who's on the sideline for college games, it's just, so you go to an Alabama game. I remember being there one spring when A'shaun Robinson was there, and I was like, this looks like a 30-year-old man, you know, like,
yes.
Physically look like it. It's just like, and that was, you know, he was on the same team with Derrick Henry, was a running back there. You know, he just kind of looked at these, I think maybe CJ, it was the year after CJ Mosley left, but I was just like, this is a different team. And like, it was only, you know, because Saban built it like an NFL operation, but like most college teams are not like that. And so I think it's, you know, that I think that's one of the things that's so fun about it is there's just so many different flavors you get in college. And it's good to see some of it. I'm not saying all of it, but it's good to see some of it is kind of finding a path in the NFL.
I'm so glad that you brought up the Saban thing and how Saban runs his thing like an NFL team. The next thing that I was going to ask you, maybe the final thing that I was going to ask you is this phenomenon of hiring a general manager to oversee the football operation. I just saw where Auburn hired a friend of mine, Drew Fabianich, to be their general manager. What is behind this trend and how do you expect it to continue to kind of permeate and filter through college football?
Bucky, one of the hardest things right now in college football, I think if you talk to any coach and they were honest about it, would be roster management. Coaches, as you know, are super heavy as control freaks. And they look at what they're, you know, you go into any team room where the staff meets and there'll be nameplates on a board. And there'll be, you know, height, weight, the kid's name. And the class that they're in is usually delineated by different color plates, you know, and it can vary school to school. So one school, the seniors may be green. Another school, the freshmen may be green. But part of that is how are we managing what we're going to have 2 years from now? Because they usually have a good feel for, okay, these offensive linemen who are freshmen, we probably missed, you know, either the player physically is not developing or they're not committed to it, or maybe they just found out the kid just can't, you know, can't really process the way they hope. But whatever it is, they are trying to manage their 85 and they're looking at it 2 years out. And I think the hardest thing now because of the portal, you know, you take Georgia Tech, for example, Jeff Collins, who is a Nick Saban disciple.
Yeah.
He took over for Paul Johnson. It's a funky transition because of Paul Johnson triple option offense. That's not what Jeff Collins runs. So obviously it's not going to be seamless. He had recruited one of the most talented players in the country. And that kid, Jahmyr Gibbs, was terrific for 2 years. Georgia Tech was awful, but he was really good. And then he transfers to Alabama. You know, how do you manage that where all of a sudden it's like, you know, he's a running back, so you hope you're going to get, you know, like more than 3 years out of him. But at the same time, because so many players in the portal, you are constantly having to recruit guys on your roster. And I think to know who's out there, I mean, I talked to one of the coaches at Florida State on Friday, and we were talking about the players on their defense. And one of the players who came in for them played at Albany State. Albany State, not the one, you know, that that in Georgia, Albany State, the one that almost never has any college football players, Albany in New York. But they had a really good edge rusher who played for the same guy that was a position coach for Aaron Donald at Pitt. And that kid was became a big free agent because he was transferring off the Great Danes program to go somewhere big, and Florida State got him. And I think so. The challenge is who is on your radar, you know. And then you find out when their names go in the portal, they don't say, "Hey, this player was a nightmare in the locker room," or "This player, you know, is on all sorts of medication and may not be." You know, you may have a lot of challenges with him emotionally, or, you know, this player was on lists all the time. You don't know why they're in the portal. You don't know how maybe the player just needed a change of scenery and he can flourish at a new stop. But I think for the general manager role, especially when you're talking about like your buddy coming from the NFL. So I think he has done a lot of the due diligence stuff that knows, okay, yeah, this kid might be really athletic, but how is he going to fit when we get him? Like character-wise, what are the challenges? Mm-hmm. Like, I think those are the questions. I mean, would he work in the NFL for 20 years, right? So
yes.
So he's well-versed in that, and that makes him an asset. Sometimes the general managers aren't guys who came from the NFL, so they may not look at it through the same prism. They may look at it through, you know, here's how we're coordinating visits. You know, some general managers, like I know Lincoln Riley made an interesting hire in the last month. He hired Dave Emmerich, who was Mike Leach's right-hand man from the time he got to took over at Texas Tech. And Dave Emmerich was very involved in Mike and Leach's staffing hires and would people on Leach's radar, hey, this is the guy I think we should hire as the new cornerbacks coach, or this is the guy as the D-line guy, this guy. So it depends on what school and who the person is, but sometimes some of these GMs are very involved in that. They can be involved in that. Thing is huge for how they are going forward, because it is so much harder now than it was just a year ago.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And it's one of those things where I'm really excited, because there are a lot of guys that I spend years and years on the road with that are getting opportunities. I think it's a unique position, but I think if done the right way, I think you can tie together where you have an NFL-like operation that really encompasses all the things that you have to do in college. I think the one thing that I think you have to do in college is you almost have to have two things working simultaneously. You have to have a great, what I would call player development, skill development program, where your weight room, your coaches that are dedicated to really working on the skills to build your players up, your young guys that come in, all of that is working on one hand. And then I think you have to have the other part, which is almost like operating like NFL free agency, where you're in the portal and you have a clear understanding of what the roster needs, and you're able to go and find players that fit that immediate need. And the challenge in the NFL has always been, when it comes to looking at free agency, is not only how do people culturally fit in terms of the locker room, but scheme fit. Does this player fit our scheme? I think if the general manager at the collegiate level is able to clearly understand this is how we play or how we want to play, can I then go find players in the portal that fit exactly how we want to play? So now when they come in, they can jump right on the field and have a seamless transition. The general managers who are able to live in both of those worlds, I think are the ones that are going to be worth their weight in gold. And I think their teams that they're in charge of are the ones that are going to win and win at a high level.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how people use the portal. Like I would look at like Washington State coaching transition there. The defensive coordinator becomes the head coach. What he did do was hire two coordinators. One, Eric Morris, who was a Leach guy, but had been the head coach at Incarnate Word. Eric Morris brought his quarterback, Cameron Ward, who had a phenomenal year last year. And they think be like a, you know, he's going to push Caleb Williams to be arguably the best quarterback in the Pac-12. So he knows the system already. The coach has worked for him, knows him. Now, obviously, there's going to be a big difference to go from, I think, during the Southland Conference in FCS to the Pac-12. But he also got his receiver with him, who's a good slot receiver and a good fit and a good return guy. And then on defense, they have the defense coordinator came from Nevada, where he had two really good players, a linebacker especially. So they know the system. But I think what they have done is, they've said, you know what, we're going to take players. I think they have an offensive lineman from like FCS or maybe even Division II. They took and they're like, okay, we're going to put a premium on, because the head coach there, Jake Dickert, has coached at all three, you know, all levels of college football. And his feeling is, you know what, I don't think there's a huge difference between as much of a difference as people think there is in the levels of football. Now, there's a difference, obviously, between like FCS and Alabama. But if you look at some, if they played a lot, they're probably accountable. They're probably reliable. They probably, you know, have some toughness to them, as opposed to, oh, this guy was a highly rated kid out of high school. He's not really played, though, you know, anywhere. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, we're projecting to see how he's going to fit. Maybe there's a reason why he wasn't playing. Whereas, all right, this guy was a starter and he's an all-conference player 2 years. At the very least, he can be in our rotation and being a contributor. He may not be an NFL prospect, but he can be better than what we had because we can rely on him. And I think so there's that part, but then there's the other part, which is from the NFL, is if you're looking at like high school line prospects and you're not at a top 25 program, you're looking at projection. 235-pound kid and saying, all right, what's he going to look like in 3 years? Is it worth us to think that kid can be 290? Or, you know what, maybe that kid's never going to, you know, commit to it like we need to. And I think those are those are going to be the harder questions, because right now, I think with the way the portal is, I don't know how patient people are going to be to develop.
Yeah, and the other thing with that, as you close it out, is not only do you have the patience, but is it going to be a situation where you're like Georgia Tech, where you have a guy that you get up and running, you finally get him to the point where he's good enough, and then the bigger school comes in and swoops in and takes him. That has to be the frustrating part. And so I think there's where some of the reluctance will happen, because you pour everything into a player, you develop him, you get him really up to the level where now you're like, man, we have him for 2 more years. He's going to be a great player for us. And then someone else is like, oh, great, we'll take it from him and get him to the next level. That is the challenge. And I'm sure that's going to lead to a lot of frustration from some coaches. And it may lead some to be like, you know what, we just may live in the transfer portal, which kind of sucks for the high schoolers. But the way the money is flying off the shelves when it comes to the college game, you kind of have to do what you have to do when it comes to that.
Yeah. I mean, look, on that end, Bucky, I moved the freaks list that we do every year, and I've been doing it for, I don't know, coming up on 20 years. I moved it to like almost mid-August, because from talking to coaches who are like the group of five level, there are guys who are hesitant to give me, you know, the real
names
of their guys, because if I do it in the spring, they know those guys are going to get poached.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with Jeff Traylor from UTSA.
Yeah.
I'm like, you really have a cornerback who's 6'4 and runs 4.32 and has like arms that are like 96 inches long? Well, he did. I mean, quite that long. But like, you look at the measurables of what that kid had, you're like, why is he not in the Big 12 at least, or in the SEC? And if the school said, hey, you know what, I know that staff, those two staffs were committed to you and did a good job developing you, but wouldn't you rather play in Austin and run out, you know, and win the burn orange and be on the stage? Yeah.
Yeah, that makes it hard, man. It makes it hard. And I do understand, like, why you kind of want to keep things private and you don't want to see it. It's fascinating. And this was fascinating, man. I love college football. So I love anytime I get an opportunity to pick your brain for an hour. It's great. Thanks so much, man. For coming on. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic. Freaks List is coming out. Yeah, it's coming out mid-August.
Yeah, so it'll be out in 3 weeks or so.
Cool, man. Thanks so much for coming on. We're going to have to get you on again when my partner DJ's on, and we can ask you a bunch of different questions about what's going on in college football.
I appreciate it. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Buck.
All right, man. Hey, that's it for the podcast today, guys. Make sure you tune in Thursday. We got another episode brewing. We'll talk to you soon.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.